Here's a scary thought, a new doomsday clock for Russia and the U.S. I'm not fear-mongering. Here, check out what the U.S. Department of Energy said last week in a report. Effective nuclear security for all stockpiles worldwide will be almost impossible to achieve without Russia and the United States working together. President Obama even said so himself this past spring at the nuclear summit held in the Netherlands.
I think it is important for us not to relax, but rather accelerate our efforts over the next 2 years, sustain momentum so that we finish strong in 2016.
But accelerating they are not. In fact, as tensions have risen over Ukraine, nuclear cooperation between Moscow and Washington has been put on hold. Matthew Bunn directs the Managing the Atom Project at Harvard's Belfer Center. He tells me that spending money to check on Russia's nuclear stockpile is well worth it.
We are investing in nuclear security in Russia not as a favor to the Russians, but as an investment in our own security. It's important to us that this material, and the Russians have the largest stockpile in the world, be secure and accounted for so it can't fall into terrorist hands.
So we just heard President Obama saying how important it is to stay on the case. But just how serious is the administration on nuclear nonproliferation?
Well, the president, I have to give a lot of credit, has taken a real leadership role in establishing this nuclear security summit process that has brought leaders from all over the world and has resulted in some major progress. But right now, they are cutting back on the budgets for nuclear security too fast, too soon. We just put out a new report that we called Cutting Too Deep, analyzing the budget cuts and how they are delaying the work to upgrade security for nuclear material in Russia and around the world.
And is Russia also relaxing its kind of position on containing nuclear stuff?
Russia has taken a complacent view that all of its material is secure and accounted for. It's true that the security is greatly improved compared to where it was in the 1990s. You don't have gaping holes in fences anymore, no detector at all to set off an alarm if someone's carrying out plutonium in your briefcase. But you do still have significant weaknesses that we need to work together to make sure are addressed properly.
And have you been to some of these stockpiles recently? I mean, for example, Ukraine. When was the last time you were at one of these sites?
Well, the great thing about Ukraine is that in the lead up to this crisis, as part of President Obama's initiative to try to secure nuclear material around the world in 4 years during his first term, we got all of the weapons-usable nuclear material out of Ukraine. Imagine if we were in the same situation we are in Ukraine today, but there were several bombs worth of nuclear material that we didn't know who had their hands on them.
Talk a bit more about the weaknesses. What cases of vulnerability of nuclear stockpiles are you most concerned about?
Well, you know, a lot of people feel like, oh, yeah, I remember back in the 1990s this was a problem and there was highly enriched uranium showing up in parked cars in Prague and so on, but surely this isn't a problem anymore. The reality is it's still a problem. The most recent major seizure of stolen highly enriched uranium was as recently as 2011 in Moldova. There was a seizure in 2010. There was a seizure in 2006. There was a seizure in 2003. So this is not a hypothetical future worry. This is an ongoing reality that we have to cope with.
Your father, George Bunn, saw nuclear proliferation in its first phase following World War II. He worked for all the major nuclear agencies in Washington, helped negotiate the first nonproliferation treaty. He had to deal with mutually assured destruction, sleepless nights, I imagine. Do you think he'd be sleeping okay today?
I think he'd be sleeping a lot better today. The Cold War is over, but toward the end of his life, he was very focused on this issue of security for nuclear material. Remarkably, the treaty, the nonproliferation treaty that's about preventing the spread of nuclear weapons, doesn't say anything about preventing their spread to terrorists. Mm. And right after 9/11, in a major meeting at the International Atomic Energy Agency, he said, you know, if I'd known then what I know now, I would have made sure there was something about keeping this material secure written into that treaty.
So this is kind of in your DNA. Is that why you do this work?
There's a handful of us second-generation nuclear arms control people. All of us, I think, scratch our heads and wonder whether we'll get this problem solved in time that there won't need to be a third generation of nuclear arms controllers.
Are you hopeful?
Oh, no. This is a problem that's going to go on for a long, long time. As long as terrorists bent on mass destruction and nuclear materials that could be used to make a crude nuclear bomb both coexist in the world. And unfortunately, that will be true for decades to come.
That's not a terribly optimistic kind of outlook, but in this field, are you an optimist or a pessimist? We need to put things in context, I guess.
I'm one of the more optimistic people who works on these topics. Today, out of almost 200 countries in the world, there are only 9 that have nuclear weapons. A quarter century ago, there were only 9. To have no net increase over a quarter century is an amazing public policy success story. Over the next 20 years, I'm very hopeful we will stay at 9 or maybe even decrease.
Matthew Bunn, directly managing the ATOM project at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.